Hare Krishna. Here's some questions from a Bhakta Das. Sorry for being a year and so many months late. If someone is insulting my spiritual master or spiritual master in public, but they are more senior to me, what should I do? Is it Vaishnava Aparad to defend my spiritual master, even if I'm not saying anything offensive, but simply asking them to stop criticizing him? No, not at all. It's not offensive. The duty of a Vaishnav is not to hear blasphemy of other Vaishnavas or criticism. The duty of a disciple, even more so, is not to hear blasphemy of their spiritual master. They should either defeat that person who's criticizing. They should, if not that, then they should ask them to stop talking in their presence, or barring those two, one should then leave the place and leave the association of that critic. Whatever we speak to other Vaishnavas, whoever they may be, shouldn't be offensive. It may be firm, but it should also be kind. And if they take offense, that may be their fault, but Krishna will not take offense. The question goes on, what if they are only senior by age? Same thing. There's no restriction in Shastra about seniority, age, and so on in this regard. But rather, it's very clear that one should not listen to criticism of Vaishnavas. Someone may have some valid criticism, but it should not be done in the open, in public. Criticism should be addressed to the person being criticized, or to people who have very relevant connection and relationship to the person in question. What if they are senior in terms of being an ISKCON for longer than myself, but no longer practicing Krishna consciousness? Are they still considered senior? They're still considered senior in a technical way, even though they may not be senior in Krishna consciousness. So there's Krishna consciousness in terms of the seniority in terms of Krishna consciousness, the seniority in terms of amount of service done, the seniority in terms of age. It's best when all those are present in a Vaishnav, but when they're not, one still offers respect, even if that respect is a formality. Okay, the second question. These were all in line of one. What is your opinion on the devotees offering and eating fake meat dishes? They look and taste like meat, but are made from soya, tofu, etc. Well, the first thing that comes to mind, aside from seeing a sausage or omelette or something like that, which is really a repulsive concept, is that of burgers, which have been around for a long time. Although burgers in one sense don't necessarily look like any form of animal, or don't even necessarily look like meat, they're sort of sandwiches. But no doubt one could criticize that they're also meant to resemble meat products. Otherwise, to eat or offer things that look like animals, out of the question. Perhaps if someone wanted to start a vegetarian restaurant where the specialty is that everything looks like meat product but is vegetarian, that's a good thing for non-devotees. But for devotees, why would devotees want to eat anything that looks like an animal product or looks like an animal? For instance, either sweets or marzipan in the form of animals, sometimes in the form of cow, is something that devotees don't like to touch or consume. Because even in the form of a sweet, why would we want to be seen or engage in eating some type of animals? So I'm not in favor. Number three. I listened to your podcast regarding non-alcoholic beer. Did you know that it is made by removing alcohol and there's always still a trace of it in there? No, I did not know that. Is this offerable? No, I don't think it's offerable. And non-alcoholic beer is another beverage. Why would we want to drink something that really reminds one of an illicit habit, taking intoxication? Number four, Why in ISKCON are children of devotees, more specifically children of Prabhupada disciples, treated as though they are special even when they do not practice Krishna consciousness strictly or according to the standards set by Srila Prabhupada? This refers back to the previous question of etiquette. I don't think that they're necessarily treated special. They're treated different. Just like there's an etiquette that we treat different people, different Vaishnavas, differently. One treats a guest who walks in for a temple for the first time in one way, and that's different than how we treat devotees. Guests who come regularly, we treat maybe differently than we treat the person who walked in the first time. Srila Prabhupada would treat a wealthy visitor who would very rarely come to a temple differently than he did others. He specially opened the curtains when they arrived after darshan was available, curtains to the deities. We treat Prabhupada disciples in one way, those who are disciples or next generation devotees in another way. We treat children in one way and we treat adults in another way. So children of devotees may be treated differently than others, and why? Well, one reason is because for them, in one sense, Krishna consciousness is quite spontaneous. It's very natural. And they may not be strict followers. That's true. They may not be strict followers, but still, they're Krishna conscious in their own way, and to make them followers doesn't really require very much. It requires love and attention, and once they do become strict followers, then because Krishna consciousness has been their life, then it continues to be their life in the strict sense of the word, very, very easily. Hare Krishna. Then, number five, what respect should non-practicing Prabhupada disciples get? Should they be allowed to give class or lead kirtan? Srila Prabhupada mentions that in order to sit on the Vyasa Sun, one has to be following the four regulative principles. So someone who isn't following the four regulative principles shouldn't be giving Bhagavatam class. They shouldn't be seen to be in an official capacity where they're representing a temple or the institution. Same thing, I would say, as far as leading kirtan in a temple room or in a festival. On the other hand, if someone is being invited to some kind of commemorative event or some other thing, and they're just asked to speak either their own remembrances of Srila Prabhupada or experiences of ISKCON, then certainly, why not? As far as leading kirtan, we want everyone to chant Hare Krishna, and we want devotees who are not strictly following to also chant, what to speak of, lead kirtan, but not necessarily lead kirtan in a way where their example compromises the institution. So they may lead kirtan in home, in a gathering of like-minded souls. We want to encourage everyone to be practicing followers of Srila Prabhupada, but we need to balance that off with also the integrity of the institution. Question number six. In my podcast dated 9/9/12, you said, quote, this is what it means to be a spiritual master, someone who you're going to be systematically studying Srimad Bhagavatam under and who's going to teach you the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. But this is not the system in ISKCON. And then he quotes different devotees whose disciples are left under the care of local management, who are not self-realized souls. So he says, this seems to me that the system is flawed. It is not the traditional guru system where a guru instructs his disciples. That is certainly my preference, that a disciple is directly able to a spiritual master who's a disciple is directly able to guide his disciples, to train them, to teach them the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and so ensure their spiritual advancement. However, even if I think of myself, then I can't say that I'm doing that for every one of my disciples. Even say in the place of my residence here in Hungary, because If there are 300 disciples here, I'm not personally instructing them. I'm certainly giving Srimad Bhagavatam class. I'm guiding as many as I can personally, but ultimately I also have to revert to a system where I empower other senior devotees, disciples, to care and oversee the spiritual advancement of disciples. And that is a traditional guru system where the guru doesn't really limit himself to a very small number of disciples. If he takes more than 50, 100 disciples, it's no longer possible for a guru, whether he's located in one place or traveling the globe. So in addition to empowering others, senior devotees, to give spiritual guidance, he can, in our present day and age, be on email, doing podcasts, doing Skype. Lectures are readily available. So I would say that whereas being locally visible by the disciples is advantageous and preferable, but I would judge something on the basis of, does it work? And if it's working, if the devotees are understanding the essence of Bhagavatam, if they are being trained as proper Vaishnavas through a system of mentorship and communication through internet and so on, then it's acceptable. And if it isn't working, then it's a problem. And his last question is, if sannyasis can't take responsibility for the disciples, then shouldn't they be stopped by the GBC from expecting hordes and hordes of disciples? There is a Guru Services Committee who is churning this discussion, and no doubt if they, or as they come to procedural approaches, then when they see that the guru isn't actually doing his duty towards his disciple, then they will either themselves or suggest to the GBC that such and such person should not accept further disciples because those disciples aren't getting what they should get. So yes, I do think that the GBC should act in such a way. Now let's see what happens in the future. So these are the answers to Bhaktivedanta's question. Thank you, and Hare Krishna.